Welcome to the Haney Biz Project with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz Companies. He's working tirelessly to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution and share the inspiring stories of the region's most influential leaders. Coming to you from the Marquee Media Studio, here's Mark Haney.
All right, all right, all right. Yes, this is the Haney Biz Project, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown that we love. We are entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, one entrepreneur at a time, one conversation at a time. And I am here with my main man, Marcus Haney, to talk about entrepreneurship, to talk about winning. You hanging or banging, Marcus?
You know, you ask me that question every week, and I'm going to turn it back on you this week and say, are you hanging or are you banging?
When I'm banging, I am at my very best, at my very best opportunity, and we are here attempting to ignite an entrepreneurial revolution. And so I am on my very best opportunity, but will I be at my very best? We do not know yet.
I think you're right there. Look at that energy you got going already.
I have the energy, but can I deliver? And, you know, luckily on this show, Marcus, we rely on guests. We rely on experts. We rely on the stories of the region's most influential people. So today, I think we're going to be banging, right? I think we're going to be at our very best.
I agree.
How about you? Are you doing all right? I mean,
I'm at my very best. I had a talk with Kim Silvers, Dale Silvers HR. Got a couple things squared away, so I think I'll be okay.
Human resources.
I don't want to get into it on the air.
Well, we'll get into that later. Maybe toward the end of the show. But I had somebody ask me a question the other day, Marcus, and I felt like it tied to this show a little bit. This week's show. They asked me, Mark, when is the next recession coming? And you know what I told them? Any guesses?
When Donald Trump's up for his next election.
Okay. Is that your guess?
Yeah.
That's not right, but it's a good guess.
All right. 2020?
The answer is, I don't know, okay? Nobody really knows when the next recession is coming, but I think as entrepreneurs, right, we have to shore up our financials, and we have to focus on what we can control. Sometimes we get ourselves caught in focusing on all this stuff happening on the world stage, on all the scary news that might be out there, all the worrisome stuff, and we don't focus on what's most important, which is putting food on the table for our families, and that begins with our financials, right? Our balance sheet. Is our balance sheet intact, right? Are we over-leveraged? Do we have too much debt? Do we have enough liquidity? I mean, that's how we make sure that we are ready to handle, you know, the big next unknown recession, because we know that one is coming. And the other thing that I think we have to do is, you know, when we think about defending our company in bad times or in tough economic times, I think what we need to do is think about focusing on growing that company. Some people might say that the best defense is a good offense. What do you think?
You know,
but you were that way in football, right? We had
a
high score.
Yeah, a little bit. I was good on both sides of the ball, though, so it's tough to decide. But I don't know. What do you think? Is a good offense the best defense?
I like that approach. I think, you know, I guess I think focusing on what we're good at is a key. And I've always been kind of that guy that could throw a party and more of a sales guy at heart. So, you know, I built a no-huddle offense when I coached football. But then I think that's also what I've tried to do in all the businesses that we've grown around here or we're attempting to grow. It's really create a great offense. And then there are things that I'm not good at. Guess what I do? I outsource them. Other people to help me out. They may be business partners. They may be relationships outside my company. There's a time to know what you're good at and what you're not good at. And you need to know that, especially when the times get tough, right? So one of the things that I know with the entrepreneurship and the entrepreneurial revolution is we've got to get ourselves known, right? We have to get out there. And now you see me, Marcus, on the marquee media billboards all the time. It's
I try to avoid them now. Who is that guy? I keep seeing him all over the place.
Yeah, but it always makes me think, you know, why would someone want to get known? It's part of the offensive play here at Haney Biz and the Haney Biz Project, but it's causing me difficulties, all right? When I was a kid, we all wanted to be on the cover of the Rolling Stone. You remember hear that song,
yeah.
Dr. Hook song?
Oh, song.
I know, like, magazine. Big rock singers. Yeah, everybody wanted to be on the cover of the Rolling Stone. You want to be a rock star and be on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Now it's Forbes,
and
right?
Now it's Marquee Media.
Okay.
Now everybody wants to be on the billboards for Marquee Media.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So since my billboard's been up, social media is blowing up, And you know, it's created this problem. I got all these ex-girlfriends trying to be friends with me on Facebook, and it's really awkward. It's causing me some difficulties.
You don't have any ex-girlfriends still around, do you?
Because of my age? Yeah. They're still alive, but you know what? That hurts me. All I can say is, thank you, Marky Media. We're getting a lot of attention for our billboards, and it is all because of you. And Marcus, you know, if there's one thing that I want to be famous for, it's being your dad.
Oh, wow. Did you make me cry on the air again?
This is the Haney Biz Project coming up in the show. We will meet Steve Petty, the technical guru, my man from DSA Technologies. We will also meet Suanne Vandermeiden, the founding partner of Vandermeiden Maddox Law Corporation. But coming up after the break, we will meet Kim Silvers, the founder and president of Silvers HR. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com. Brought to you courtesy of Legion AVS. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Rolling Stone. Wanna see my picture on the cover. Stone. Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Yeah.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Now, back to Marquee Media Studio and the Haney Biz Project with your host, Mark Haney.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Comstocks Magazine and California Backyard. I'm Mark Haney, and today I have the privilege of being joined by Kim Silvers, the founder and president of Silvers HR. How you doing, Kim?
Hi, Mark. I'm good.
Welcome back to the show. You were one of our first guests that we ever had on our entrepreneurial radio program, and you're back again sharing wisdom about entrepreneurship and about how to keep ourselves protected in the world of human resources. How do we do that these days? It's a complicated arena.
You know, it's really hard to be an employer, especially in California, and I think your comment about the best defense is a good offense is absolutely right in terms of employment here.
Yeah.
I feel like I mentioned earlier, much of my day is about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
A little rock and roll in there?
Mostly two out of three. But yeah, there's lots going on. And, you know, it used to be the outliers on either side. You know, the top 3% or the bottom 3% took up the majority of the manager's day. And now, you know, there's so much going on about sexual harassment, about the Me Too movement and that certainly more and more people are starting to look up and say, hey, was that me? Was that, you know, funny remark meant to be something else?
Oh, wow.
It's really, really become much more of our day in terms of phone calls.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I've been, going back 30 years, we did sexual harassment training and there was all this concern and it blew up. And then now it seems like what I've seen is, especially when you turn on with the internet, right, there's a lot of vulgarity. There's a lot of foul language. There's a lot of stuff that's sort of out there in mainstream, and especially in podcasting. And then when you get into the workplace, everybody has to change and tighten it up. Is that really the way? I mean, how do we as podcasters who drop F-bombs, right? I don't. I'm one of those ones that doesn't use the Lord's name in vain. I don't, try not to cuss. I kind of think of it as if my grandkids can't hear it, maybe I shouldn't be saying it. But that's not the way of the world. How do we be rowdy on the outside, and then we come into work and we have to be so controlled?
Well, you know, I find that it is different, and I think because people are so much more free with their language, particularly a generation different than mine. So, you know, as baby boomers, I came out of a generation where you did have a different personality, or at least what you said at work was different than what you said outside of work. And now, particularly for a younger generation coming in, particularly people who haven't worked a lot, they have some challenges to understand that there is a line you cross. Right. In some work cultures, that's not a big deal. In other work cultures, you can get in a lot of trouble. But I think people see, particularly on movies and social media, the casualness of a touch, a comment, the language, and they don't get that. And then they end up with a big challenge or end up in an investigation about sexual harassment claims.
Are people more litigious today because of some of the high-profile cases of sexual harassment?
Oh, my God, yes.
I guess that's the Me Too movement.
Yeah, I don't think that's only it.
Okay.
But I find, particularly in California, that employees know as much and sometimes more than their managers do about their rights. This is a state that has many layers of employment law, many of those layers protecting the employee. And somebody always has a brother-in-law who's an attorney who says, hey, you know, I think you should go check this out. I think, you know, you could probably have a class action here, and seeds are planted. So people just talk about it more, certainly with social media. The word gets around more, and then they're not just talking to their current employee friends. They're talking to past employees, and it can blow up pretty quickly now, much more quickly than it used to.
Amazing. And just think that we're outside. It's tough to switch gears. And now, thinking of like sexual harassment, now people have to be bothered before it's an actual incident. Is that right? How do we know where's the line between it actually being sexual harassment and just being, Mark trying to be funny?
Oh, that's a great question, and the answer will be different depending on every situation. You know, it's really based on the perception of the receiver. So I think I'm pretty cute and funny, and I make comments because somebody else said the same thing, and everybody else was okay with that, but you're not, and all of a sudden I've crossed that line. And you know, we do lots of what we call respect in the workplace training, and we use a gangplank to say, you know, this differs for every single person, but, you know, you stay on the good ship appropriate, you're fine. You step out on that gangplank, and you keep getting more and more flirtatious to the point where it's raunchy, and you step so far out, you're going to fall into the ocean. So for everybody, that's a little different in terms of how long that gangplank is, but it's really a walk of caution these days.
Well, it's amazing because you want to create an upbeat, fun morale atmosphere, a culture, if you will, that makes everybody want to come to work, and yet you are handcuffed. Now, let's talk about Silver's HR. You are in the business of helping employers to navigate these waters.
Right.
What do you guys do?
So we do a lot of, you know, the employer calls us, our clients are all on a retainer with us, and the employer says, look, I've got this employee who isn't performing, is performing badly, just tripped over a curb, is pregnant, whatever. And so we'll help coach them through that situation. We're not attorneys, so we take a conservative route, because I can't do anything for you if you go to court. But certainly our job is to keep our clients out of court and to minimize their risk and give them options to say, here's different ways you could approach this. Here's what we recommend as the least risky way to approach this employee, so you probably won't get sued. And, 95% of the time, the client follows what we recommend. They don't get sued. Our clients don't go to court very often if they do, if we're lockstep.
Do you typically help an HR manager, or is it typically somebody who might be like an office manager or an entrepreneur who is playing a human resources manager him or herself?
I'd say it's probably 60-70% are business owners or managers, line managers, who need the help. You know, they're not HR nerds. Mm-hmm. They're in the business to grow the business and do the operational part, and so we'll help coach them. That when we talk to HR managers, it's more so about compliance issues. We're doing management training. We're helping them with compensation plan design. So we're doing more nerdly work with the HR manager.
So we bring you on to help our business before we have a problem. And then invariably, there are issues that crop up, and then you help us through the issues.
That's a great bumper sticker, Mark. I should use that. Yes, that's exactly what we do.
Well, but what I want to know is, when did you decide, okay, I always wanted to be the guy that threw parties, and I've been doing it my whole life. When did you decide you wanted to be an HR nerd? You love HR. Oh, you love the God. Product you sell.
I love what I do. Okay. I love the stories. I love that what we do cuts across all parts of the organization. I could write a book, but I will guarantee you that Sue Ann Vandermeiden up next will write a better book. And I've been doing this for many decades, and it's just a hoot. I love it.
I can only imagine. My wife was the HR director for the city of Roseville for several years, as you know, but she was also risk management. So often it's combined, and so you're trying to protect the organization and the assets, but at the same time, you, as an HR manager, you're trying to make it a fun workplace, right? You sort of wear both a few different hats there when it used to be just like throwing the company part and all the morale stuff, but yet then you've also got to put on your legal hat, if you will, the risk management hat.
You do, and it certainly gets more and more difficult to do that. I certainly think with recreational marijuana becoming legal here in California, the company parties will get more and more interesting.
So if I have a company party, it's okay to my employees can smoke pot during the party? And I can't do anything about it?
That's your call, Mark.
Oh, wow.
I don't recommend you do that
Okay. And
put them in a car. But, it's the same thing as serving alcohol now. And I think, you know, we had lots of calls from clients when recreational marijuana became legal on January 1st or to sell it. And, it's the same thing. Somebody shows up, they're not fit for work. Yeah. You look at what's their behavior and you address that behavior. It's same thing as if they came in and they reeked of alcohol or, you know, they had powder under their nose. We're going to address that.
Okay, so we have a construction company and there's a lot of heavy equipment and we drug test. If they're caught for use of cannabis, I suppose, I can use that for hiring them? Can I use that information for not hiring them?
Yes, certainly. Okay. You can do a pre-employment drug test.
Okay.
It has to be contingent with the offer, contingent on passing the drug test.
Okay.
And absolutely, you can do that and say, and probably the bigger issue is, oh, this is medical marijuana, and
okay,
I'm using this for some sort of pain control. Still not legal under the federal law. And so there was a big court case in California many years ago with Raging Wire. And and the court said, look, an employer can still deny the use of medical marijuana in the workplace.
Wow. As it's amazing how many things there are that we have to do to protect ourselves. And I always think, you know, focus on what we're good at, focus on hopefully growing our company and outsource to people who are experts in the field. Because here I am, I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm sort of guessing at these laws, but I can rely on someone like Kim Silvers to sort of hold my hand, walk me through the difficult parts, the stuff that's not that fun sometimes.
I would love to keep you out of jail.
Well, so far, so good. I want to thank you, Kim, for what you do for the entrepreneurial community, for sharing the stories. We talked about sex a little bit. We talked about drugs a little bit. Maybe we can talk about rock and roll after the show. Thanks again for everything. And you have recommended that we bring on our next guest, who you work closely with, from what I understand, Sue Ann Vandermeiden, the founding partner of Vandermeiden Maddox Law Corporation. Join the revolution of HaneyBuzz.com, courtesy of Audi Rockland. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Marquee Media Studio with Mark Haney, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution with the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Hub International and Allegiant ABS. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Sue Ann Vandermeiden, the founding partner of Vandermeiden Maddox Law Corporation. How you doing, Sue Ann?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me here, Mark.
I am glad you are here, and you've heard the previous discussion between Kim and myself. Thoughts? What's your reaction to our conversation? Is that the truth, or are we in a different world?
No, we're in the same world. Kim's a genius. I've worked with her a long time, and that's my world, too, in some respects. I don't do HR. I'm not a plaintiff's lawyer. I'm not a defense lawyer. I'm somewhere in the middle of this unknown territory of what we call a neutral workplace investigator, and then we do campus sexual assault investigation. So my book is similar to Kim's, maybe a little more What's the word? Racy?
Okay. Oh, this is going to be fun. Okay. So let's talk about that racy entrepreneurial journey. So, okay. So you started this very significant law corporation many years ago. How did you get the entrepreneurial bug and what's the company look like today?
Oh, wow. Well, I'd love to be able to say, I for all the women out there, I'd love to be able to say I had this perfectly devised plan when I was age five. This is what I did. And from there, I built all these networks. It had nothing to do with that. I sort of, as Kim talked about, started, you know, I was a farm girl in North Dakota, and I moved to California, and then I went to college, and then I went to law school. So I was kind of that gangplank that she talked about, and eventually I fell in the water of lawyership. but I love it. I have a fantastic team of 17 lawyers, and we do all workplace investigations and campus sexual assault investigations.
Do you love the law? I mean, obviously, you're in this specific niche of the law, but did you always think, I love the law? I like to argue.
No. I'm not one of those constitutional lawyers that really likes to debate all the different laws. I'm just more of a practical person. Okay. I show up to work at my desk and this lands on my desk. What do I do? That's really my skill and my interest and what I really love. And I think that's what we do for employers. And, you know, you talked some with Kim about the Me Too movement. That's one aspect of what all employers are dealing with. But there's a lot of landmines for employers across the country, but in particular, California.
Well, you mentioned, you know, the word racy. So let's get into some of that racy stuff. What do you run into where some of us might go, wow, you deal with that?
All right. Well, I feel like I should do a caveat. If we're going to go racy, I think it's only fair that I say that, you know, we can have fun. I'd like to have fun. You can have fun in the workplace. But the work that we do is very real. It has very serious implications for employees and employers. And so I don't mean to make light of that as we talk about raciness. Mm-hmm. That being said, I have the greatest job, and Kim does too, because people do such bizarre things. It's surprising what people do. If you were to say to me one day that the most powerful person in the entire United States would do, well, maybe not the most, but one of the most powerful people in the United States would, you know, take pictures of themselves, of their junk, and send out, I would say, no, that couldn't happen. And guess what happens?
And they still keep on going. They're still high-profile people.
Yes.
The one that is famous, I mean, there's so many famous ones out there right now. The one that I think was most as disturbing as any of them to me that I can remember is the gymnastics coach doctor that examined the young gymnast. My daughter was a high-level gymnast, and I just think these kids are so vulnerable. Sometimes these terrible things happen to the people who are most vulnerable. Right.
Yeah, and so you're talking about two different things, I think. And no, it's the same thing from the standpoint of people can engage in bad behavior that is not, you know, good in the workplace. And what you're talking about there is, I think you're right. You're talking about a position of power, and even more so in maybe the sports world, because there's a huge age dynamic potentially, and that coach or that doctor has in part the ability to help them with their dream, their career.
Right.
And you're talking about young kids in some instances that don't always know where the boundaries are. They don't always recognize it as it progresses. It's particularly troublesome when you're talking about really vulnerable people. But in almost all instances, you have a power dynamic.
Right. So in the workplace, the CEO has this power. So he or she really does have, it's not such so obscene necessarily as, you know, the gymnastics story with children, but it still can be, someone could feel helpless. And then they go to HR and complain, and when those complaints happen and they don't know what to do, you know, we call Kim Silvers. But I mean, when it escalates, when it is something egregious, it can bring in somebody like yourself to help figure it out.
Right.
Well, give us an example of what that might look like.
Well, it can be any number of things, right? So it can be the night shift technician that says, I'm going to kill 19 people here and I have a list. And the employer says, whoa, I don't know. Did they really say it? That's the first question. Did they actually do that? And then do they have the list? That's one piece. So we can go in and do that investigation. And then you may need to bring in a threat assessment expert to determine whether or not they will actually kill the 17. So it can involve workplace violence. It can involve the treasured, you know, the bookkeeper for the last 17 years who's accused, or you see irregularities and they're accused of embezzlement. It can be a conflict of interest, or it can be, as you know, you mentioned with Kim, the Me Too movement, some sexual harassment kind of claim, discrimination, retaliation. And what we do is we come in and we answer the question for the employer, did the conduct more likely than not occur? And if it did, was a violation of the policy, which then allows them to take whatever's corrective action or not, you know, to have a response that's commensurate.
So you typically will help. You're on the side of the business person or the business people typically, or is
no.
that 100%?
No.
No.
Oh, thank you for asking that question. Yeah, that's the big question. We are, so there's defense lawyers and there's plaintiff's lawyers,
okay.
and we're neither. We are what is considered an impartial workplace investigator. We have no interest in the outcome. We're not spinning the facts in the most manner favorable to the plaintiff or the defendant. We try to see facts, because there's almost always facts on both sides, and then
okay.
we resolve it by a preponderance of the evidence. And what's so, I think, fascinating about our job is that for people pleasers like me, I think you and I would do well at a party together. It sounds like we like people.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost always one or both parties don't like what we did, because we have to make really difficult findings. And so we then, if there's a lawsuit down the road, we will then be sort of star witness A, and we testify, here's the good faith process we went through to reach this reasoned conclusion upon which you, dear employer, relied upon.
Right. So when you go in to do your investigation, who do you talk to? And then how do you actually get it resolved? Because don't we typically on both sides want to avoid taking it all the way to a jury trial?
Okay, good question. So who do we talk to? We start with what we call the complaining party, right? And we find out who they think has relevant information to their concerns. And, of course, we'll talk to what we call the respondent, the person who's being challenged with some misconduct of some form, and then any other witnesses who have relevant information. We might do site visits. We might review all kinds of documentation. There might be forensics on phones and computers, all of those things. And then we make findings by preponderance of the evidence. And you had a second question. Oh, how do you keep it then out of court?
Yeah.
So that's kind of
do you want to keep it out? You don't care. You're not. You're indifferent
right.
on that
right.
issue. Okay.
Right. I mean, it is good. When we're doing investigations, we certainly don't want to make things worse. We'd love to be able to try to resolve it. And to the extent we can see ways in which this can be fixed, we'll provide that information. But it's really not our role to keep them out of court. We'd like to think that our process is helpful and can resolve things, but really that's not our ultimate goal.
Well, let's talk about your business. Okay, so it's scary when as an employer, we have a number of employees, and then we have a real estate company with subcontractor type employees, and all over the board, and it can be scary out there. But you're building a business as well, so you have to deal with the same stuff as the rest of us. You have employees, you have partners, you have issues in your own workplace. Well, how do you guys operate? How do you play defense when it comes to running your own business?
Wow, that's a great question. Well, I think it's our best defense, I think, is preventative measures.
Okay.
I think, and you'll see, historically, we've always known we have to do training and we have to have the right culture. And I think as the Me Too movement, there's going to be maybe more robust training processes. Maybe you're going to do more civility training, more bystander training. But I really think it's building the right culture, leading by example, doing all these preventative measures. If you get a complaint, to take it seriously, respect it, investigate it, respond to it. But I think that's the new wave that future employers are begging for answers to that.
Is your business growing? I ask that because it feels like we hear a lot more about litigation and things like that. So I would think that would make your business like a growth opportunity.
It's been phenomenal. We're really uniquely situated because there's very few firms that are only workplace lawyer investigators. There are a lot of firms that do investigations, but they're either solo shops or they have a much larger defense practice or business practice, and they have a few investigators. We have 17 lawyers, and we can't keep. I mean, we're like all investigators right now. We're turning away work.
Wow. So the biggest problem you have right now is finding the right team, the right new people to come on board.
Yes.
Wow. Very, very interesting stuff. Any words of wisdom and to us? The one thing I love about this show is like we're entrepreneurs, kind of like swapping stories, and that's how we learn. Any advice to us entrepreneurs about keeping our businesses safe in terms of litigation and protecting our assets from all the crazy lawsuits that could be coming out there?
Well, in how many minutes do I have? How many days do I have? I guess maybe if I were to say a couple things, it would be is to really have an understanding of where the gray areas are. And if you're going to venture out into the gray areas, as Kim described it, the game plank, to be thoughtful about it, because really there's kind of two rules. Your intent does not matter. It's how it's perceived. So while intent doesn't matter, you have to be very intentional when you are starting to venture into the gray area. And so I think those two things are really important.
very good information. Sue Ann, I really appreciate you coming on the show. When we return, I will be joined by Steve Petty, the VP at DSA Technologies. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Chicago Fire and Apex Appraisal Services. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Now, back to the Haney Biz Project with investorpreneur Mark Haney, coming to you from the Marquee Media Studio.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of DSA Technologies and California Growth Advisors. I'm Mark Haney, and I'm joined by Steve Petty of DSA Technologies. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing phenomenal today.
Thank you for joining me. We want to learn about you. We want to learn about DSA, and maybe we'll learn a little bit about technology, too, right? Because as entrepreneurs, it can be kind of overwhelming. But let's talk about it. Let's start by getting to know you, Steve. Your background, you're an entrepreneur. Give us your journey and how you got hooked up with DSA.
Sure. I actually started out in this industry a long time ago. Don't want to talk about my age or anything here, early on in my career, I had an opportunity to acquire a company that I was working for, and we actually went to SBA. We were able to get an SBA loan. We were able to take down the business, and it was a fairly small company, about 12 employees. There were two of us. We actually took the company down and built it up to 60 employees in seven states. It was headquartered here in Rockland, California. And in 2012, I had an opportunity actually to sell my portion of the company, and it merged with another company and continued to grow. At that particular time, I could not actually go work because I actually had a non-compete in place. Sue would know about that.
Yes.
My old partners actually contacted me, and they were really focusing in healthcare, and they wanted to split off the technical team and move it to another company. I was having breakfast with one of my good friends who owned DSA and really wanted me to join the team. And so we negotiated actually to bring the team over to DSA at the same time to relax my non-compete so that I could actually go back to work. Started off as business development. Wasn't sure how much I wanted to work at the time. And after working 60-hour weeks, because I only have one speed, and that's on or off. Well, I have two speeds, one on or off.
Well, that's kind of like hanging or banging. Off, hanging is like downtime, relax mode, but banging is when we're at our very best, right? On, and hopefully at the very, you know, at our very best.
Right.
So what's that look like today for you? What are you doing?
So anyway, once joining the team, we really focused. Michael actually asked me if I wanted to become the vice president of the team and give me an opportunity for some ownership in the company. And so I agreed. And really, we have taken the company from where it was on the managed services side of our business, and that was really where I was focusing. We took it and actually put all the right pieces in place. The company really grew, and we had to actually put some infrastructure in place. We had to put policies, procedures, those types of things in place. Today, we just have an amazing team. I love going in. The energy in the company is phenomenal. It's a great place to be.
Well, IT managed services, it does sound like something that would be wildly fun. But why don't you tell me? I'm a sales guy. But tell me what's so great about it, and what do you do for your customers? What do your customers love about what you do?
Well, they actually love that they don't have to worry about IT, right?
Yes.
They don't have that stress. They don't have to wake up at night saying, are my systems going to be down in the morning? You know, did I actually get a backup? Is it offsite? Do I have to worry about those types of things?
So you take all that technical stuff that would normally be done by a team of IT guys at a company, and we outsource it to a company like you.
Yeah, it doesn't always have to to look that way. So okay. we may outsource 100% of it to us. We manage it 7x24. They don't have to worry about that. We actually can handle, we have virtual CIOs, so we handle budgeting, everything. Or they may have a staff that they want to hang on to, and we augment that staff. And we actually create a team. Their team and our team creates one team, and we function as one team, and we provide those services together.
Well, we were talking earlier with Sue Ann and Kim, and they run into some crazy stuff. What's the crazy thing you might run into in IT?
Craziest thing. I actually saw somebody take a CD and stick it in a microwave and turn it on and watch it actually catch on fire. So that was probably one of the most odd things I've ever seen.
That is odd that the IT guy is involved in that. But okay, thinking to myself, like if I'm a, you know, I'm a manager, I own a company, and my IT guy, you know, he's holding me hostage, right? Yep. This IT guy, he holds the keys to the kingdom, all the passwords. He knows all the technical stuff. I feel sort of stuck because if he leaves, you know, who knows what he's going to take with him. How does something like an IT outsourced service help eliminate that, you know, horrible feeling that I might have?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've actually seen a situation where an IT person left and had all that information and nobody else had it. They called us and we actually had to come in and we had to go through everything and figure out actually how to take control of the environment and lock them out. And they were pretty malicious. And so that was a challenge. So as a company, we basically take and document everything and have that in a vault that's secure. And so even if they have IT people on staff, when we come in through our onboarding process, which is about 90 plus tasks, we actually go through that whole process and get all that information and actually put it in a secure place to where the managers and the owners of the companies actually have access to that information.
Well, you talked about your culture a little bit earlier. And when I walk into your business, right, you are in the old Sunrise Bank building, as I like to call it. I was involved in the launching of a IPO bank here a long time ago. And the tallest building in Roseville was the Sunrise Bank building, right? They built that. You guys now are the occupants of that building. What's it like when we walk into your office?
Yeah, when you walk into our office, it's an old bank. So we actually still have the old vault in place. And so that's actually where when we order equipment or anything for a client, we actually put it in the vault and we lock it up every night. And so we have security that we feel comfortable that we're storing their information or their equipment actually in the safe. In fact, at one point in time, we had $500,000 worth of equipment in there for a couple clients. But when you walk in, it's very open. We have an open environment, so everybody, you could see everybody in the whole office. Our offices, we have a few offices, but they're open as well. So it's a positive, enjoyable place to be. I mean, that's just the way it has to be for me.
What's an ideal client look like for you?
An ideal client, you know, it's kind of interesting. So when you're talking about IT, you want to create a partnership. Some people look at it as a vendor. If a client is looking at us as a vendor, then we're not doing our job, right? So if they're a true partner and they communicate very well with us, and their staff actually they buy in the fact that they want to outsource, that's an ideal partner for us. We can actually shine when we have that opportunity.
Yeah, when you think about all the different things we're afraid of, the unknown, I think so many times is what we're afraid of. You know, what new cybersecurity attack might be out there? What new product that we're investing into might become obsolete? And what do we do? What happens if our IT manager, holds us hostage? These things are scary stuff. But Steve, any closing thoughts just in terms of like what can we do today to help keep our IT program running smooth and so we don't have to stay up at night worrying about that kind of stuff?
I basically would take and evaluate what you have in place today. Is it meeting the needs that you have today? And if it isn't meeting your expectations, I would certainly consider outsourcing to a managed service provider at that point in time. And you know, what's crucial for that is making sure that the managed service provider actually has the same core culture that the company has. So if they do, the chances of success is much greater at that point in time.
Steve Petty, DSA Technologies, thank you for coming on the show. When we return, we will have our takeaways and closing thoughts about the importance of outsourcing, and maybe I'll have time to share my no-huddle offense sales strategy. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Ethan Conrad Properties and financial advisors Stifel Financial. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Marquee Media Studio for Mark's takeaways from today's Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Silver's HR and Five Star Bank. I'm Mark Haney, back here with Marcus Haney, talking about outsourcing, right? And some of the guests today, we're talking about the defensive side of the ball. And I always say the best defense is a great offense, right? You got to put points on the board. You got to make some sales. Then you can afford to outsource, right? But maybe you can't afford to outsource either way. Thoughts, Marcus?
Well,
my first
thought is that Kim Silvers is having all the fun. Drug, sex, and rock and roll. Yeah. It's like, come on, how do we get a part of that action?
Yes,
but
exactly.
Anyway, great guest on the show today. Loved hearing about it. But yeah, outsourcing, that is the name of my business, though, at the end of the day. So I think with technology as it is today, the ability to outsource to folks that are better than you in certain areas is a little more easy than it has been in the past.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I always try to find the football analogy, right? The best defense is a good offense. And remember when I coached you in football, we had some championship teams.
You know it.
And we took, you know, we had great offenses, right? We scored a lot of points, right? That was our motive. We ran the no-huddle offense everywhere we go. We would onside kick after we scored a touchdown every time and try to get the ball back. It was basically score as many points as you can and hope the other team doesn't score against you. It was all about
pressure.
Offense,
yep.
Right? And I think that's how I built my businesses. Now, it's not easy to do, but if you focus on the offensive side of the ball, good things happen, but you've got to make some sales, right? And so many times we have these problems in our business, but I like to believe that there's no problem a few more sales won't solve. There's no more there's no problem a few extra win sprints, a little bit extra practice. That's how we figure out how to make it win, how to make it work in sales. So often it starts off a little bit clunky, right? And I think that that's the nature of the game. And it reminds me of a story of that I got when Bob Garrison, my good buddy on the concrete side of things, his wife called me and said, it was right at the end of the recession, right? We're talking about the recession earlier. And it was 2010, and I had just sold my companies. It's like, hey, Mark, what do you think about partnering up with Bob, right? She basically fixed us up. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, I think he could use a sales guy on his team. So we went through and we talked about the sales strategies there at Placer Concrete Construction, right? Where they do driveways and patios and foundations. And at first, we were a little clunky. We were meeting over and over to draw out the mechanics of how to grow the business. But we're in the worst economic times that we've had that we can imagine. And time after time, we went through the basics of the process. And next thing you know, we're running the no-huddle offense. Bob and I are finishing each other's sentences. I've now jumped out of that loop. I'm not even a sales guy for Bob anymore directly. Bob now has created his own no-huddle offense. He uses assistants to basically let him do what he's good at, right? He is a good sales guy, and he knows his product. He knows concrete, right? He's great there. And he can outsource all the rest of the stuff to assistants or to Haney Biz Accounting or to whoever else he's using to subcontract with. He is able to focus on what he's good at. And I think that's where it begins, is that commitment to having a sales organization. I call it a no-huddle office because I think we ought to be trying to score as many points as we can, because as entrepreneurs, it's our job to grow, bring what we have. And I think Bob is a perfect example of doing that, a perfect example of commitment, right? It starts with commitment, and then eventually, like Bob and I did, we learn. We begin to comprehend exactly what that sales process looks like, right? And then eventually, we get some confidence, right? We have that confidence. Now, Bob is off on his own running this no huddle play that we have. And so it starts with commitment, though. If you don't have the commitment, you never dive in deep enough to really understand what you're doing to get that confidence, and that flywheel thing starts to happen. And that's when your business begins to take off. And that's what happened with Plaster Concrete. They're one of our most profitable companies. They're doing a heck of a job here, and I owe it all to Bob and his commitment and running the no huddle offense. So just thinking about any entrepreneur out there who's chasing the dream, right? Going after their goals, their dreams. You know what? Sales is what it's all about, right? Outsource what you don't know. Go get Kim Silvers to work on your HR. Go get Steve Petty to help you with your IT. And you focus on growing your business. You focus on making the molecules move. Because you know what? Sales is what saved my security companies. Sales are what saved Plaster Concrete Construction. Sales saved the Sleep Train, the Sac Republic, the Sacramento Kings. It was all around sales. It was all around entrepreneurs deciding to commit to making sales. And I believe that sales is what's going to save this hometown that we love. And so just a Sacramento salute to the leaders of hometown patriotism, to those fighting the good fight for our freedom like you, Marcus, to our security and our way of life, and to the 13 stripes and to the 50 stars and to the one big American sales company always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you,
always by your side.